Good morning, Your Honors. Please, the Court, my name is Irving Sonkin. I represent the defendant, the appellant, whose name is Magdalena Schutte. And I would request that I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All right.
This case involves an in rem action that was to return a piece of property that the plaintiff, Renata Piontek, said belonged to her. She sued Ms. Schutte in state court. It was removed to federal court. The two problems we have with what happened is, first of all, we believe that Ms. Schutte was not properly served. As a Polish national, she should have been served under the Hague Convention, and they did not follow through with that. The second problem we have is based on the judgment and the evidence that was given. Ms. Piontek's former husband, Stanislaw Piontek, was a necessary and proper party to this action.
Counsel, what triggered the Hague Convention application in your view? Why would the Hague Convention apply to this case?
Because Ms. Schutte was a Polish national residing in Poland.
Now, what case says that if you're trying to sue a foreign national that the Hague Convention is automatically triggered?
Well, the cases we cited, such as...
What's your best case?
I think the best case is probably the and I'll pronounce it wrong, but the Volkswagen case. This Volkswagen mm-hmm. work case. But there's also the...
Well, that case says that the Hague Convention applies when a state statute requires mailing of documents abroad in order to effect service. Is that what we had in this case?
Can you repeat that, please?
The case you cited, Volkswagen, says that the Hague Convention applies if a state statute requires mailing of documents abroad to effect service. Is that what we had in this case?
We had the mailing of documents in
Poland. Was there a state statute that required that the documents be mailed abroad in order to effect service?
Yes.
Okay, what state statute required that in order to effect service, the documents be mailed abroad?
It doesn't say mailed abroad. It says that one of the elements of publication is that copies of the documents also have to be mailed to the defendant.
Right, but it doesn't say they have to be mailed abroad.
The convention itself, in Article 1, states that it applies in all cases where there has to be judicial documents served abroad.
Exactly. But there has to be something requiring the documents to be served abroad. You're bootstrapping your argument. If the state statute said that the documents had to be mailed abroad, then I would agree with you. But there's nothing in the state statute that requires the documents to be mailed abroad. In fact, service was attempted here in the state of Washington, right?
They said it was. The problem was Ms. Schutte never resided in the state of Washington.
Well, that was a quick... Go ahead.
That was my next question. Wasn't there some evidence in the record that would have allowed the district court to infer that she did reside in Washington?
Well,
I recall they'd gone to the house. They heard voices inside a couple of times. They knocked on the door trying to effect personal service. No one answered. Could the district court have inferred from that Ms. Schutte was there and just not answering?
There was no evidence as to who was in the house at the time the alleged voices were heard, and it was, as I read the record, it was hearsay, and we have also evidence in the record where Ms. Piontek stated that she knew that Ms. Schutte was living in Poland with her former husband.
This was Ms. Schutte's house. They went to the house after the transfer had already gone through. It was in her name.
It was in her name.
The people are inside. They knock on the door, and the voices stop, and no one answers.
And they check with the neighbors, and the residents say the neighbors are rarely home. It's her only known address in Washington. So, and she's claiming, and her name's on the property.
Wouldn't one assume that a person resides in a house that's in their name?
Not a case like this. Would a plaintiff assume that she resided in Poland, and the plaintiff knew that she did not reside in a house?
Didn't Renata mail copies of the documents to three different addresses in Poland? Isn't that part of the record here, too?
Yes, that is part of the record, which meant that she knew that she was in Poland.
But I thought you just told us that she didn't comply. There was a deficiency in compliance with the Hague Convention.
Because under the Hague Convention, you have to look at the place to where the documents are being sent, and Poland doesn't recognize service by mail. And secondly, the documents were sent in English, and there was no attempt to explain what the case meant in Polish or a language that Ms. Rudy would understand.
Well, it all kind of harkens back to, it appears clear that she knew about this lawsuit. She has a lawyer. She's represented in this lawsuit. And I couldn't tell. It seems like she didn't show up for the lawsuit, but there's some indication in the record that she was ill in Poland and after having a child or her second child or something along those lines. And then Mr.
Piątek?
Yes. Piątek, is that how you say it?
Well,
Piątek?
I think it's pronounced Piątek. I don't know how
the
pronounces it.
All right. That he's at the hearing. He presents evidence. We're not talking about a situation where your client doesn't know about this, and there are some, you're making one argument, but there's other arguments in the record that so indicate that it happened otherwise, and it seems pretty clear that the district court felt that, that it had happened otherwise, made those factual findings, and moved on from it. Maybe you should spend time on some of your other arguments.
The other argument would be under the necessary party.
Well, can you show me anywhere, can you cite any place in the record showing me that Stan Piątek actually claims an interest in the disputed property?
No, because he wasn't a party to the action. Mr. Piątek was not represented. He did not appear. But clearly, we start with an in-rem action, and the plaintiff, appellee, brings in all this evidence about the alleged use of community funds elsewhere in making a decision against Ms. Schutte, not against Mr. Piątek.
He's essentially a witness at the bench trial for your
witness,
client.
Correct, but he was not a party. He did not have representation. He was not able to present his claim.
He testified. I mean, this isn't complicated stuff. It's whether he has an interest in the property or doesn't. And he testifies under oath that no community funds went into purchasing the property. He doesn't have a community interest. Wasn't that the substance of his testimony under oath?
His substance was that the property belonged to Ms. Schutte because she had funds that were outside the community.
Right.
So but plaintiff prevailed saying it was community funds. If it was community funds, then he had an interest in them.
But
the plaintiff can't have it both ways either.
Well, I suppose that's one way to look at it. I mean, the other way to look at it is he wants it both ways now. Isn't there maybe an equitable estoppel position that would prevent him from now asserting an interest that under oath he disclaimed?
I would say not, because you're able to plead in the alternative.
But he didn't do that, though.
Because he didn't plead at all. But there's actually a state case pending now between Mr. and Mrs. Piątek in state court in Pierce County over the actual ownership of that house.
Well, when you come in and you testify under oath, that's going to have some implications in the future.
Oh, I understand, Your Honor, but...
this judge that hears this case has Mr. Piątek there who does not... never claims any interest in that property.
He only claimed interest...
So now what you want us to do is say that the judge should have disbelieved him and believed that he really did have an interest.
No, what I'm saying is if there's obviously a disagreement between Mr. and Mrs. Piątek as to whether or not community funds were used.
Well, the
Mr.
judge Piątek found against
took the position
him. The judge found against him and made a factual finding against him regarding this credibility, which we can't revisit.
Which meant that community funds were used, and if community funds were used, he had an interest in them.
Or her separate funds.
That could be possible. That wasn't the finding. That wasn't presented. If it was her separate funds, then
I don't know.
He had the funds, and the other concern we have is all the evidence presented to the court had to do with use of community funds and his alleged use of community funds in Australia.
Well, the court also did an equitable balancing. So even if community funds were used for the property, that doesn't take away from the fact that the court said, he's disposed of this property, and as a matter of equity, I'm going to try to even out the property ownership, and so this, even if community funds were used, I'm giving her this property as her property. So.
And that's the nub of our concern, because he did an equitable balancing with a non-party. Mr. Piontek was a witness. He was not a party to the action. We don't think the judge in an interim action had a right to do the equitable balancing between his rights to certain assets and the rights of his former wife to assets, that he would have been a necessary party. And I think it's similar in that case.
What case do you have to support your argument that the court cannot consider evidence of what each party has in terms of assets in determining who is entitled to this particular property? What case authority are you relying on?
Well,
equity is very broad.
Equity is broad as to parties. You're asking to prove a negative, but we do rely largely on the Pitt River case.
Pitt River?
Which involved two different associations saying they represented a tribe as to which one had rights with regard to using tribal lands.
Yeah, but I'm asking you about your premise that if a court is sitting in equity, the court exceeds its jurisdiction by considering property that's not before the court. What case supports that argument?
Right offhand, I couldn't tell you. When I'm waiting to do my rebuttal, I can look and answer it then. But the main contention is that Mr. Piontek was not a party, so we don't see how the court could have balanced any of his equities with regard to making a claim or a finding as against Ms. Schutte. And that's why I think he was a necessary party, because he had a real interest in being affected. And if he goes back to court in the future, then there's a concern that there'll be some type of equitable estoppel argument made that the court already ruled as to what his rights were with regard to this house.
Can a party waive his interest in this type of proceeding? I mean, when he comes in and disclaims it and says, no community funds here, I have no interest in this property. I mean, can that amount to a waiver that would dispense with the need to join him, or would allow the court to issue equitable relief that affected him? I mean, hasn't he, in essence, disavowed and waived any right that he may have?
No, because if he were represented, he would have argued, for example, that I'm claiming that no community property funds were used, but if there were community property funds used, I'd still have an ownership interest in it. And nobody was there to advise him.
Wasn't that just speculation?
As to which?
That if he were represented, then he would say this.
All these cases are pretty much that, with necessary parties. He did not assert a legal position. He was just there as a fact witness.
Did you want to save any time for rebuttal?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Brittany Pierce, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Renata Piontek. We are here essentially because Ms. Schutte would like a do-over of the entire case that already happened before the Honorable Ronald Layton in district court. What would happen if she had a do-over is exactly the same result. What she wants is a different method of service. She was already served in Washington under our Washington statutes, but she would like to have been served in Poland through the Hague Convention when our Washington laws do not require that. She also wants a do-over in the respect of having Stan Piontek, part of the lawsuit, as a named party instead of being just her primary and only witness at trial, and also having submitted 5 declarations in this action as well. If she had a do-over, if these things happen, we would have the same exact result today. Ms. Schutte has argued 4 reasons for seeking review by this court, and not one of those 4 reasons has merit today. The first is the joinder, the second is the service, next is about jurisdiction, and finally about evidence. Not one of those arguments has merit. First, looking at the joinder issue, Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 19 governs joinder. Determinations of joinder are practical and fact-specific. They are not formalistic. In this case, we have a party who used as her witness Stan Piontek And now she's come back to claim that Stan Piatek should have been named as a party. He was necessary and indispensable, should have been a party in this action all along. That argument is disingenuous, considering that he was part of this action at every step of the proceeding. FRCP 19A does not require the courts to limit their inquiry to the form of the matter and allows them to look past the form to the substance.
Was she ever there in the proceedings?
Ms. Piatek was there, Ms. Schutte was there. She was at trial. In fact, there was an interpreter at trial for her.
Okay, because I couldn't tell exactly from the record.
She did not, there were not proceedings in advance of that she was present at, but at the trial, and the record does show that at ER 15 that there was an interpreter there on her behalf at the trial.
Did you try this case?
I did not, Your Honor. The goals of FRCP 19 have been achieved here. Stan Piatek did not claim an interest in this property at any time, not in any of those declarations, not on the witness stand. He never claimed an interest in this property. That is one of the very prongs of Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 19.
I think the rule's been changed now. It talks about required parties as opposed to necessary, but do you think that changes the analysis at all?
I do not think it changes the analysis, Your Honor. You're right. The terminology has been changed from necessary to required. Mm-hmm. And back in 1966, it was also changed from a very formalistic approach to now more of a substantive and practical approach. Having a party be required or necessary, I think those really go to the same thing, whether they should be part of this action. And in this case, Mr. Piatek did not need to be part of this action. FRCP 19 case law and also the documents talking about the change in 1966 also talk about that the plaintiff has the autonomy, the authority to choose who she wants to bring her lawsuit against.
It sort of seems like that the district judge didn't believe Mr. Piatek, has said so in so many words, and essentially believed that it did involve community property, and he had misappropriated community property at various points. So I think essentially what the argument there is, well, you didn't believe me, you thought that I was lying, and it really did involve community property, therefore I was a required party.
Well, I don't think that means he's a required party.
But that seems what he's trying to argue.
Well, I agree that is the argument, but I also think that the court has discretion to consider what evidence it thinks is relevant and necessary to make a determination. In this case, our client wanted to seek ownership of a certain property in Washington, and the court had discretion to look at all of the evidence related to that. And you're right, the court did find that the credibility of the witnesses will be a very strong factor in deciding this case and found that Stan Piatek was not credible. I understand the argument, and it's actually not Stan Piatek argument now. It's Ms. Schutte's argument that Stan should be able to come in and claim some sort of community property interest in this. But when he said time and again, this isn't my property, it's not my money, it's not community funds, I think that he has a hard time coming in here to say that he should somehow have an interest in this property. Moreover, if Ms. Piatek had tried to add Stan Piatek during the proceeding, Stan could have come in and said, this is totally frivolous. I have disclaimed an interest in this property. Why are you bringing me into this lawsuit? Turning to the service issues, Ms. Schutte, she participated in the lawsuit, yet now wants the case thrown out for lack of service. Moving past the formal requirements, the whole point of service is so that a party has the opportunity to come, present their case, present their defenses, and appear so that way they can defend themselves. Ms. Schutte had that very opportunity, and she did it throughout the entire trial. She certainly had notice, she had actual notice, and Ms. Piatek served Ms. Schutte under our Washington statutes. She served her first by attempting personal service, and unfortunately that service was not successful. Had it been, we might not be in this predicament today. But after numerous attempts going to the property, that Ms. Schutte was the record title owner of that property, she could never track her down. The process server had submitted declarations that at the property, Ms. Schutte was in the home, there were voices inside, lights on, lights off, plants moved back in front of the doorways, TVs or computer lights flickering, hearing voices, and yet every time the process server knocked on the door, nobody answered. The process server did also speak to the neighbors to try and find additional information about the whereabouts of Ms. Schutte, and the neighbors said, yeah, she's here, you know, periodically. I just saw her last week. And again, we couldn't get personal service. So we turned under Washington statutes, which we're allowed to do, under RCW 4.28.100 to serve her by publication. We've met all of the requirements for service by publication. First, we could not find Ms. Schutte in the state. Second, the plaintiff filed an affidavit stating that either Ms. Schutte was a resident of the state in hiding or somehow could not be found in the state. Third, we mailed a copy of the summons and complaint to the defendant, not at one address, at five different addresses, trying to give actual notice of this lawsuit to Ms. Schutte. There were two separate addresses for the property in Washington, mailed to both of those, and then we said there are possibly three addresses that she could be at some point in Poland, and we mailed to all three of those as well, trying to give actual notice. And finally, we have a number of factors under 4.28.100 that have been met. Most specifically, the subsections 3 and 6 have been met. Number 3 says, if the defendant is not a resident but has property therein and the court has jurisdiction of the action, then you can serve by publication. That's exactly what we have here. Ms. Schutte owned property in the state. She's now claimed she's not a resident of Washington, and the Washington courts did have jurisdiction of the action. Also, under RCW 4.28.100, Section 6, where the subject of the lawsuit is real property in Washington and the defendant claims an interest in that property, we can serve by publication. That's, again, what happened here. Ms. Schutte was the owner. She certainly claimed an interest. Ms. Piatek was trying to claim an interest and say, Ms. Schutte, you don't get to be an owner anymore, and this is Washington real property. So we've met all of the requirements of service under RCW 4.28.100. Not only have we met these formal requirements, we've met the very basic purpose behind service, which is to have the person appear. Ms. Schutte filed a notice of removal on March 14, which was a mere 2 weeks after the service by publication started. She appeared in this proceeding. She appeared at trial. She did have the opportunity to present her defenses. The last two arguments Ms. Schutte raises are about jurisdiction and evidence. Evidence certainly goes to the discretion of the district court, and Judge Layton did exercise his discretion in admitting evidence. You can see from the record that throughout the case, when Ms. Schutte's counsel was objecting, the court allowed it and said, this goes to my discretion in determining sole ownership of this property. The judge also said at the end of the case, I will evaluate all of this evidence and its relevance through the rearview mirror once I have heard all of the evidence.
Counsel, what's your response to opposing counsel's position that the only piece of property that the district court had jurisdiction over was the property at issue in the action, the Washington property, and to take into consideration other property that was not before the court exceeded the court's jurisdiction?
There is no authority that says that a district court cannot consider property outside the property that gives the basis for the in rem jurisdiction. What's interesting is that the judge, he issued the judgment, and there are four paragraphs in that judgment. Three of them relate to the property in question. The fourth relates to costs. Nothing in that judgment relates to any issues, any property, anything beyond the real property at issue in this case. And the judge has discretion to consider outside matters in making its decisions, especially under the Declaratory Judgment Act, where he has authority to consider a number of factors in making or in deciding declaratory relief.
Well, is your argument that it's relevant to determine the source of funds that purchased the property in question? That
yeah.
You have to have a, because obviously there was testimony from the brother-in-law as well in terms of money that he got, and then at some point the brother-in-law becomes your client's witness because the brother-in-law decides that his brother isn't being honest about where the money's coming from. So, is that your basic argument, that understanding the bigger picture is relevant as to deciding how this particular property was purchased and whether Ms. Schutte's, there was also a transfer to the mother of Mr. Piatek, right?
I don't think there's evidence of a transfer to the mother. Stan Piatek claims that money came from the mother.
Okay.
There was a $1.2 million transfer to Ms. Schutte. But you're right. It does go to the whole background of these parties. It goes to exactly what's happened between them, where the money's come from. The entire point of this lawsuit was just part of the scheme that Ms. Piatek has claimed Stan Piatek perpetrated against her
well,
to hide funds.
Well, the district court's faced with Mr. Piatek saying, I don't have an interest in this property. And then Ms. Piatek is saying, hey, it should be mine because it comes from money that I should have had from the marriage. And Ms. Schutte is saying, she's saying, either I brought it with my own separate property or I bought it from money that was given to me by the mother.
Yes.
The court has to decide where the money came from, right?
Yes, and the district court did decide where the money came from. It looked at all the evidence, and it wasn't just testimony of the parties. It was actual written documents, hard evidence that the court could consider and use its discretion in considering to determine where the money came from and who should have property at the end of the day. And what the court found was that not only was Stan Piatek not credible, but that the documents also showed that the funds came from community property. They went to purchase the house in Washington, and that based on the judge's equitable discretion, Judge Layton could determine that Renata Piatek should be the sole owner of that real property. You know, in conclusion, Your Honors, Ms. Piatek does request that this court affirm the judgment entered by Judge Layton. We don't believe that he abused his discretion at any point. All of the arguments made by Ms. Schutte are much more formalistic than substantive, and this court should not apply those formal arguments and elevate form over substance in this matter. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, in answer to your question about whether this could have been Ms. Piatek's separate funds, the judgment itself and her brief all argue they were community funds.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's true that the court has a right to go in and determine what the source would be to see if Ms. Piatek has any claim, they can't decide that Mr. Piatek has no claim because they don't have jurisdiction over Mr. Piatek. So while the court...
They can't consider
his... Piatek says he has no claim to the judge.
Because he didn't think it was community assets, but once it's determined to be community assets, then his position is different.
Isn't there another possible interpretation of the outcome here? I mean, Judge Layton could have thought, yeah, this is community property, but he took into consideration other community assets that he found had not been distributed according to Washington divorce law. She hadn't gotten her half, and he's operating with equitable discretion. He can say, you know, I don't think she got her fair share on this one. Even though this is a community asset, I'm giving her the whole of this. Isn't that one of the possible interpretations of what happened here?
Exactly, which is why Mr. Piatek would have been a necessary party, because what he's basically saying is, I'm giving this portion of community assets to your former wife because you took other assets elsewhere. He tried to balance the entire marital community.
How is the outcome changed if we send this back and say, okay, make him a party? His testimony is now a matter of record. The judge's credibility findings about rejecting his statements are a matter of record. How do you expect anything would change?
Because if the court came in, we would be able to dispute the representation of community funds because we believe only a small picture was shown of funds that they owned in Poland, Australia, and the United States.
He's stuck, though. I mean, Mr. Piatek's stuck. He's testified under oath already that there were no community funds. What's he going to say differently now?
That if there were community funds, he should have an ownership interest in them.
And the judge is going to believe him?
That's up to the judge.
Well, he already said he didn't believe him.
Well, in the lawsuit that she brought, she has the burden of proof to show by what standard that the properties should be hers, right? So, and by not believing Mr. Piatek and hearing the other evidence, does the judge really even need to know where the money came from? She's shown it belongs to her and that the other people are liars about what they said. And now that you're asking for a second bite of the apple for now to say, well, now that you didn't believe me that I have no interest or you didn't believe me that my mother gave the money to Ms. Schutte, I want to try this again, and maybe I'd even like to do it in front of another judge and just start all over like I never said that again and now say it's community property and do all of that.
I think that clearly shows that Mr. Piontek was not represented in that case, because otherwise an attorney representing Mr. Piontek certainly would not have made a flat-out rejection of any interest he would have if
it were community. All you can tell someone is don't lie, all right? And if someone
I understand.
Testifies.
However, in many situations, a client will believe something, and the attorney will know that the client's legal understanding of what he said isn't correct, even if the facts are correct. So even though Mr. Piontek's credibility...
So you're not advocating subornation of perjury. You're just advocating a better understanding of a person's right before they take the oath so that they don't lie and lose.
No, what I'm suggesting, Your Honor, is that when a person says something that's a legal issue, that person may not understand what the legal issues are and may be totally wrong. And even
though there was a factual underpinning to that testimony that the money was from his mother. So that can't change. I mean, there's
that's
no
correct.
Way to change that testimony.
That would be the same.
Yeah, that's right.
His testimony was that money went to his mother, it was used. Ms. Piontek's was that it's community funds that was siphoned to the mother.
So that's a factual matter. Whether you have a lawyer or not, the facts don't change.
However, if he had a lawyer, he could have argued that if, in fact, the distribution to his mother was incorrect because it was community funds, then he would have a right into whatever those community funds acquired.
I understand your argument. All right, thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The case just argued is submitted for decision by the court. That completes our calendar for the week. We are adjourned.